Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments today, but I would like to thank all of those of you out there who are liking me on SoundCloud. Now, it is very encouraging to know that you're out there listening, and I like likes. So keep that going. Well, on our last program, I had to go solo, and I began a discussion of Charles Krauthammer's tongue-in-cheek essay, The Appeal of the Ordeal. Now, this is one of the longer essays in Mr. Krauthammer's book, Things That Matter. And I think everyone knows that this is a tribute series to Charles Krauthammer, and we are using that book, Things That Matter. Now, if you are following along with me, you know we got through basically the first two pages of The Appeal of the Ordeal. Now, I did discuss in the previous program the unusual ancient trials by ordeal of detecting witches and dead poets. And so I'm not necessarily going to go back to that today, but you can still hear that podcast on either SoundCloud or on KPCG-FM. You can also hear that at thetrumpet.com. Now, also on the last program, I began discussing one of the more popular recreational trial by ordeal, and that is the marathon. And so for today's program, what I want to do is I want to finish my 9 points on why running a marathon may be good for you. And then, of course, I want to move on to more of the essay. And unfortunately for me, I'm still going solo today. And I have to say, it will not be such an appealing ordeal for me today. And why is that? Well, the OKC Marathon has been postponed until the fall because of the coronavirus fears. Now, certainly, I think older Americans into their 80s and above are at risk, and we should be concerned for them. But yet, they are unlikely to be running a marathon. And then there are other individuals who have other defined health issues, like if you've had lung cancer, if you've had diabetes, if you're a smoker, they're obviously also at risk. But they are also unlikely to be running a marathon. And if you really have the opportunity, I really highly recommend that you listen in to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. That is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Mr. Stephen Fleury. And he is doing a masterful job of keeping us updated on the statistics of what's going on with the coronavirus. And the thing he's recommending is we just approach all of this with a certain amount of balance, certainly with amount of concern. But there is some really mass hysteria out there. And, we're not saying not to be cautious. That's not what we're saying at all. But I really do think it'd be good if you listen to those programs. Now, this program won't be running for a week. So essentially, you would have to, if you're listening to the program, this program for the first time, you'd have to go back and listen to last week's programs. And so, but you can still get all of those on podcast. You can hear them. And I highly recommend that you do. Now, again, obviously, we should all be concerned. We should be dedicated to personal hygiene and quarantine. But I think we should be probably a lot less panicked and a little more reasonable in our approach to this contagion. And, of course, we should do what our governments are recommending. I do think that, unfortunately, some of this has been politicized. And I do think our President of the United States is doing everything he can to help out the nation. And, some people have not been so nice about his efforts. And, again, I think that's political weaponry that we could really do without right now. Okay, so for today's program, let's just dig into my reasons for why you may want to run a marathon. And I only have about four more to go, and then I'm going to get back into the rest of the essay. But again, you can go back and listen to last week's program to get the first five reasons. But I think for these last four today, I want to start with the fact that, you know, running a marathon, and again, now remember, I don't believe everyone should be running a marathon. I don't think everyone's capable of running a marathon. But I know that even the training that I've been doing, and like I said, even last time, I have been running on the average about six smaller races a year. So, you know, for the last 2 years, that means I've run 12 races. Two of them were half marathons. The thing is, I can honestly say I know I have increased fitness. Mr. Krautheimer is going to come back and make some more comments about marathons today, and that's okay. We can deal with it. And but I know that I was absolutely amazed at how much I've fallen in love with running, and I fall in love with the experience. Now, there are days when I'm, you know, if I do a really long run, I'm probably going to be a little bit sore the next day. But I've noticed that if I really take care of myself and I do the right recovery, that there's even some days I've run 15 miles and the next day I don't have any problems. And, you know, there are certain foods and fuels and certain, you know, energy drinks that you can take. It does take a lot of study. But I think there are a lot of people out there that have fallen in love with running. And I know there is one gentleman in the state of Oklahoma who is older than I am, and he ran seven consecutive marathons in 7 days on seven different continents. Now, that might seem extreme. And to me, it actually seems somewhat extreme. But if he wanted to do it and he could do it, he did it. He won a medal for doing it. I mean, that has turned out to be a good thing for him. And I think he's actually into his 90s. And I probably should have checked on that before I came in here today into the studio. But the thing is, you can't just run a marathon. You have to train for it. And if you work hard for it and then you finish your end goal, well, it's really very rewarding. And I think I did say last time that you know, after running 2 years, and before running, I actually had a medical checkup. And then after running now for 2 years, I had another medical checkup. And again, I do have access to Medicare and all that because of my age. I will be 68 in just a few more weeks. And but the medical doctor who's known me for 20 years said, I don't know what you're doing, but you're in better shape now than you were 20 years ago. And he's the one that told me I actually have the heart and the lung capacity of now of about a 44-year-old. And so he said, whatever you've done, just keep doing it. And he said, you know what? He said, I believe you can keep doing this into your 80s. And so I'm planning to do that if time goes on long enough, and if I don't die of some other reason, I'm planning to continue to do it. So once you achieve some things, you realize, you know, I probably could have been doing this a lot sooner and a lot earlier. So there is increased fitness when you challenge yourself. And like I said, not everyone has to run a marathon. But if you like the idea of running, maybe you could run, you know, a short 5K race. Maybe you could run a mile. Maybe you could start with that and then run 2 miles. I know when I started out, I thought I was going to die running a mile. And so now I'm getting ready to run 18 miles in 1 day. So my training isn't going to stop. There is a good chance I'll be able to even move my Oklahoma City Marathon to the Tulsa Marathon. The day they rescheduled it is the day I can't participate in. And so that was a little frustrating, but I did write them, and they said they might be able to change it to the week before Thanksgiving, that Sunday before Thanksgiving. So that'll be a great way to go into Turkey Day. I can eat all the pumpkin pie I want after running 26.2 miles. Now, the other thing that I wanted to say about running is another good reason for running a marathon is it does produce friendships. There's another fellow just about my same age, and I did not know he liked to run. We've been aware of each other for a while. He actually enjoys running, and I enjoy running. And so we've been scheduling ourselves to run races together. So you can build friendships. Running alongside a friend or maybe with a group of like-minded friends, it really makes it a lot of fun. And then, you know, we talk about training. We talk about, you know, how to do our best. We talk about if we had a rough day, we talk about that. And so you can build really good friendships. And it does. It gets you out. It gets you in the fresh air. It gets you in the sunshine. It gets you, we even have run in the rain. Not that we wanted to, but we had to. And even those things are a little bit challenging. And I know on the last race that I ran, it's the Oklahoma City, I ran at the Turkey Trot, it was raining. But, you know, that didn't stop us. It may have stopped our speed, but it was still, everybody was laughing, everyone was having a good time. And it's really not a bad thing. Now, the other thing is that I think is really great about running is you will, explore new places. I don't just run in Oklahoma City. In fact, I've run in several different cities in Oklahoma. And it is always fun to get into some different terrain. You see different people. There is some community there. And you talk and you laugh and they always want to know, well, where are you from? And I ask where they're from. And so you do get to explore new places. I would very much love to run in Colorado. I would really also like to run in Arizona. And I'm thinking of doing those things. They have a Sedona race in Arizona that I understand is just absolutely gorgeous because you're running, you know, in the mountainous area of Arizona. And also there's the Boulder 10K, which I understand is really rough. It's a real challenge. It's like uphill all the way. And so I think that would be a fun race to run as well. Now, even my old hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, they have a marathon there. So there's a few friends I have from high school. I wanted to kind of call them up and see if they want to run the Pittsburgh Marathon with me. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but it could. And so I think that would be a lot of fun. The other thing and the last thing I want to say is really I think running a marathon, and again, that's the 26.2, I do think it will change you. And I do think, you know, I've changed for the better. I have a better outlook. And like I said last time, you know, I do have a job that's very mental. You know, I'm teaching Shakespeare, teaching English language lit. I do write, for thetrumpet.com. I write for Royal Vision. I write for the Philadelphia Trumpet Magazine. And I've been on some special projects. I've helped write the Child Rearing booklet. I've helped write a Bible story booklet. And so that's a very tough mental job. And you know, to do writing, you really have to study. You have to, you know, get your facts straight. I mean, it really is sometimes a heavy mental job. And we try to work very hard. Here at it's the Philadelphia Church headquarters. It's at the college, and when you're get in at 8 and you work hard till 5, sometimes you need something really refreshing, you know, right after work to get you going again. And certainly, running will help you do that. But the number one thing I want to say that I've really tried to focus on when I'm running is I'm really running to compete against myself. And it's not that I'm out trying to beat somebody, although my good friend Steve and I, we do talk about beating each other. And he said he'd like to catch up to me, and I kind of chuckle because I'm 10 years older than he is anyway. So it's going to be hard for him to catch up to me because he's got 10 years to climb. So anyway, we joke with each other like that. But again, once you compete against yourself and you win, there's a lot of value to that. Also, even if you look into the Bible, the Apostle Paul does say that overcoming and attaining the kingdom of God, we do believe what the Bible teaches, that you have to qualify for the kingdom of God. the kingdom of God is the government of God that's going to be established on the earth. And even the Apostle Paul, I know he went to, you know, Olympic trials, and he went to Olympic races, and he saw, it was the Roman Empire that he was traveling through, so he saw these races, and he compared the Christian life to running a race. And so I feel like there's some spiritual depth I've gained from saying, you know, when you're at the start line, you want to tell yourself, I'm not going to stop running until I hit the finish. And even Paul says that, you know, it's the person that completes the race that wins the prize. And so I even feel like there's some real spiritual advantages to that. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from Charles Krauthammer, because I think, you know, there are some extremes out there. But one thing that he brought up in the essay, and I thought I'd clarify some of this, is he did say, and this is the bottom of page 50, he says, yet the marathon has become so commonplace that a new sport had to be created, the triathlon. And actually, it's triathlon, not, there's no extra A in there. That's people from Western Pennsylvania try and add A's where they don't belong. And like we say Washington instead of Washington, or we add an R. So it's triathlon. There is no triathlon. It's triathlon. And so he says that was created. He said it's a monstrous composite of three consecutive marathons, swimming, biking, and running a total of often 100 miles or more. Now, the thing I want to say about that is I got some statistics on this, and there are four common triathlon distances. Now, remember, he wrote this essay in 1984, and so I guess in some ways what he would say now is that there are now four different triathlons. In other words, creating just one of them wasn't good enough, so we created four. And so I think that could be something that we could talk to him about, well, maybe when we see him again in the future. But there are actually four different type of triathlons, and they have different mileage requirements. So I just thought I'd just give those to you just to add a little bit of color to this essay. So the first triathlon is called a sprint triathlon, and there you have about a half-mile swim, and you have a 12.5-mile bike, and then you have a 3-point-mile run. And so that's called a sprint triathlon. So that's probably be the one that if I was going to do one, I would do that one. And the other one is called a standard or Olympic triathlon, and there it is almost a full-mile swim, and it's a 25-mile bike, and it's a 6.2-mile run. So actually, other than the swim, I'm not a great swimmer, but I think the 25-mile bike would not be hard, and the 6.2-mile run would not be hard. And so I could probably form a team, get a good swimmer that's a great swimmer, and have them swim the mile, and then I could do the bike, and maybe we could find someone else to do the run. And, you know, that's fun to go out as a team. So running isn't necessarily always solo. Now, there's the half Ironman, or it's called the 70.3 triathlon. Now, I think this is getting closer to what Charles Krauthammer knew and understood a triathlon to be. I have to really change my brain on that, on what the word actually, how it's spelled and how it should be said. So anyway, for the half Ironman, it is a 1.2-mile swim, it is a 56-mile bike ride, and then it's a 13-point-mile run. So that's 13.1 is a half marathon. So if you're doing that by yourself, that is a lot of effort. I would not even try to do that one. Now, the Ironman, not the half Ironman. This is for the full Ironman. This is for the manly man. This is for that one. So you have a 2.4-mile swim. Then you get into the 100-mile. You have a 112-mile bike ride, and then you have a full marathon run. So now that really is extreme. But I know that there are top athletes that can do that. And so in some ways, we have to agree with, I think, with Charles Krauthammer on that. Now, let's go to page 51 of his essay. And he begins to talk about that there are classes of people that he actually picks on them. He says he calls them the upper classes, the bottom of page 50 and then the top of page 51. He says, but now, in terms of these ordeals, he says, now the upper classes have taken the fun indoors. And what he talks about, and I did a little bit of research on this for you as well, but he says on the top of page 51, it says, a few years ago, The Rage was Napoleon, a silent film 4.5 hours long. So what I did is I tried to do some research on what was he talking about. I mean, I was alive in 1984, and I don't remember, The Rage of Napoleon and of a movie Napoleon. But I did find an article from March 2012. This is March 16th, 2012. And I think it's talking about the same film. And this is from the Smithsonian Magazine. And so what it is, and let me just read you the title of this little article. It says, Forget the Artist, The Restoration of Napoleon is the Silent Film Event of the Year. Now, and I think this is what he was talking about. And this has kind of come up in society every now and then. And I think what Krauthammer, he really is kind of perceptive from the standpoint that there are some ordeals that just keep coming back. And here, these are like the cultural ordeals. And essentially, this is a silent film about the great Napoleon, but it's actually 5.5 hours long. Now, to me, watching a film where the actors, you can actually hear them, I might be able to sit through that. But a 5.5 hour film about Napoleon and his conquest and what happened in France with nothing but an orchestra, I think I'd have problems with that. And so I could see what he's saying. Here's what the Smithsonian says about this film. It says, some tickets are still available for what is lining up to be a major event for film buffs. 4 screenings of Napoleon at the Paramount Theater in Oakland, California. This is on March 24th, 25th, 31st, and April 1st, and this was of the year 2012. He said, the author goes on to say, it's the 5.5 hour restoration of Gans's silent epic, this is of Napoleon. It has also a full-length orchestral score composed, and it's going to be conducted by the Oakland East Bay Symphony Orchestra. But he says, you've got to get your tickets now because this is the last time it's going to be shown. So he goes on to say, the author, this is the most complete version of Napoleon since it opened at the Paris Opera in 1927 and the first U.S. screenings of the film with an orchestra in over 30 years. Due to the technical and financial demands, there are no further screenings scheduled in this country and no plans for a digital release of any kind. And so I could see that there would be these film buffs that would absolutely go probably bonkers and want to see this film. Like I said, I would really have had no desire even if I had known about it. So I think that's interesting. Now, I did do a little more reading about the film, and it does seem like the filmmaker did a masterful job of filming certain things, and I guess it's like a piece of art. So I wouldn't mind looking at pieces of it, but I sure don't think I would want to be involved in the whole thing. All right. Now, he goes on, and he talks more about these self-inflicted ordeals. And if you really think about it, what he brings out here is it's really pretty reasonable. He says, to be sure, this is still page 51, the self-inflicted ordeal was not invented yesterday. The 1920s had marathon dancing, and the Guinness Book of World Records is full of champion oyster eaters and hula hoopers. But such activities used to be recognized as exotic, the province of the down and out or the eccentric. And, you know, I think all of us have seen television shows about, you know, the Guinness Book of World Records, and we have been amazed and maybe interested in some of the weird things that people do. But he goes on to say, you know, that there are some really kind of weird, eccentric things. He said, for example, like the 24-hour underwater Parcheesi game. It was for slightly nutty college freshmen. So I guess you have to don scuba clothing and go underwater to do Parcheesi. I have no interest in that. Now, he picks on marathons again, which, I will excuse him because he's such a genius and he's my favorite essay writer. But he said running a 26 miles at a shot was for the most hardened athlete, preferably a barefoot Ethiopian. And there are some wonderful Ethiopians that still win a lot of the marathons, the Boston Marathon, and they are great runners. He says, but nowadays, a 26-mile run is a Sunday afternoon recreation, an alternative to a day at the beach or on the lawnmower. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, because every half marathon I've run starts really early in the morning. It's like 6:30. So when I get my chance to run a marathon, you know, I want to start at 6:30 and I want to be done by 11 in time for a nice big lunch. And I don't necessarily see marathons as a Sunday afternoon recreation. Now, I could see a 5K or running 3.2 miles, even, you know, running a 10K, that's 6.2 miles. I could see that as recreation. So, but again, we can excuse his thoughts and his thinking because he was such a great writer. Now, he says, as for the evening recreation, well, I didn't read this from above. He said, at the top of age 51, then came the stage production of Nicholas Nickleby. That was 9.5 hours. And then there was Fassbender's Berlin Alexanderplatz. And, I think he doesn't necessarily give the time for that. But he comes on and down below, and he says, as for the evening recreation, Fassbender's epic is so popular that the Wall Street Journal dubbed it the flash dance of the intelligentsia. Again, if you just read page 51, you're going to be able to pull that together. Now, he goes on to say, what's new is not the odd individual who rows the Atlantic left-handed while eating only salted peanuts. Now, you know he's totally joking there. Nor the collegians perched atop flagpoles for reasons still unknown. It is the midday mainstream Main Street marathoner. So here he's picking on marathons again. The modern wonder is to be found on America's Heartbreak Hills, where it has become impossible to drive without running across and nearly over at least one bedraggled jogger, drenched in sweat, close to collapse, and the very picture of agony. Why do they do it? So, why do we do it? Well, I gave you 9 reasons why I do it. And I think I gave you 9 reasons why it's good to do it. You know, he goes on to say, the participants will tell you they go to marathon movies for culture and they run for health. Now, that's just what I told you. It says they spend 48 consecutive hours locked in a Holiday Inn room ballroom and in forced communion with complete strangers and call it therapy. I don't know what he's exactly talking about there. I've never locked myself in a Holiday Inn ballroom in communion with people and call it therapy. But he goes on to say, Sartre had another word for it. He once wrote a play based on the convincing premise that hell was being locked in a room forever with other people. So I think, again, he's being tongue-in-cheek there. And so he said, but surely there are less trying ways to acquire culture, health, or psychological succor. So we're out of time for today's program. I'm not surprised that happens to me quite often. So next time, I'll continue my discussion of Charles Krauthammer's essay, The Appeal of the Ordeal. And we really just have a few more pages to do it, maybe 1.5. And we are now moving closer to the end of our series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter. But I still think there's more to come. And so you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. Come on, you marathoners. Join with me. right in here. Talk about running and how good it is for you. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.